Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Adrian Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That's a fact. Like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack.
Justin Robert Young.
Hey, what's up?
So, gentlemen, I had prepared in my show notes a discussion we are going to have about the cost of big science. Are we making a trade-off? Some of the disappointments of the Large Hadron Collider. But no, we get sent from Jonathan Hand a breaking update music. This, right
breaking
now,
news.
From basically the Pravda of the U.S., Coast to Coast AM has this breaking story from 2 days ago. Nicaraguan woman claims goblins abducted her. In a bizarre segment from Nicaraguan television, a woman recalled how she'd been kidnapped for nearly a week by goblins when she was a child. Sharing the incredible story with Canal 10, the woman named Jasmina claimed that the incident occurred when the entity suddenly appeared one day and began playing with her. However, their convivality was apparently a ruse as the goblins lured her away, she says, and kept her in a cave for 5 days and six nights. According to Jasmina, her family managed to rescue her by acting on the advice of a local witch. While Jasmina's tale is truly fantastic, no kidding, the presence of goblins in the area was supported by other members of her community. A pair of residents that spoke with the program alleged that there were many goblins living in the area, avoiding churches and communicating from hill to hill. What exactly these goblins look like appears to be a bit nebulous, as the television report showcased images of garden gnomes, suggesting that perhaps the creatures are more human-like rather than beastly. Meanwhile, Jasmina's story comes on the heels of another Nicaraguan being possessed during a report on exorcism. Blah, but that's not important. Although many skeptics may be quick to dismiss goblins lurking in the remote part of Nicaragua, the idea of diminutive beings behaving in just a manner, as Jasmina describes, have been reported throughout the world for centuries. Okay, I have to do time out here, okay?
Yeah, let's say just unequivocally, we're not cool with ragging on diminutive humans.
Right.
Wait, as
Brian,
the shortest person on this podcast.
Brian, stop. Stop. I have something very important to reveal. I recorded a test podcast of Darker Path. Justin was there. We recorded this. What day, Justin?
That was Thursday
night. Yeah,
Thursday
night, a day before this report.
Okay.
What was the premise?
The premise was that we were going down into the Amazon to try to find, investigate a video, a viral video of a goblin coming out
South
of the
American
woods
goblins.
And terrorizing.
South yeah. American goblins.
Art imitating life, life imitating art. You, dear listeners, be the judge.
All right, Brian, please continue. I interrupted you rudely, but...
So this chick, like, I guess, was this a recovered memory situation? Like, she just up and decided to talk about, like, well, when I was a kid, I definitely remember 5 nights and 6 days in which goblins captured me.
I don't know. I look forward to some of our listeners actually listening to the story and giving us some sort of translation of that and helping us understand, you know, what's going on there.
Yeah, well, because she mentions, like, when she was a child, which is like, man, all bets are off, because I remember teleporting through time and space as a child. I remember living a past life as a child. I remember eating a lot of bugs as a child that definitely I didn't eat. I mean... It's nobody trusts your memories on anything ever.
Space and time?
What's
did you
that?
Really travel space and time?
Oh, I told you all about this, right? One of my earliest memories is a false memory as like a 3 or 4 year old child where I assume in reality what happened is I looked at a photograph that was hung on the wall of a wheat field sunset. And I had one of those little waking dream states that children are prone to where in my memory is that, you know, and over the years, I'm sure it's gotten massaged over time, but it's like I'm wearing old timey 1800s clothes and we're throwing a baseball around or whatever. It's at sunset. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, that scene that I'm seeing I'm pulled out of it and I'm looking at a frame of it in my parents' living room or whatever. So it's like, all of this is to say, I don't trust my memories, and you most certainly should not trust my memories or the memories of a lady in Nicaragua who talks about how she recalls as a child being kidnapped for a week.
I have an alternate theory, and Brian, are you sure that you didn't go off and have adventures with Phineas Bogg? Just saying, could it happen?
Look, man, everything's on the table. Any and everything could be.
So often in these goblin stories, we come across like, yeah, they were a problem, they were a nuisance. Then fortunately, this very helpful witch or witch doctor was able to provide a very valuable service to me. So yeah. I'm going to hypothesize. Oh, your child got kidnapped, did you? Oh, it's probably goblins. Yeah, probably goblins. Yeah, I can help you find them. You know, I'm not going to ask for payment, but my assistant here, you know, will probably tell you, like, she'll never ask for payment or he'll never ask for payment, but maybe a little, you know, a little help will help. That's one of the ways that that kind of con works.
So wait, you're telling me that in Nicaragua and in some of these other places that the goblins – on some astral plane or here on Earth underneath a full moon have consorted with the witch doctors to run a scam where the goblins kidnap people and then the witch doctors collect payments so they can divvy it up, probably by blood sacrifice later that moon?
I'm saying Pedro in a Yoda mask working with the witch doctor may have... concocted.
Yeah, have we ever gotten clear on what goblins look like? Like, do we have an official goblin proto-vision, like an official stereotype of what goblins are?
In Africa, the goblin seems to be more like spirit, and that's why these goblin stories we encounter seem very much like people being victimized by people using rape drugs. We're here. This is like the Duende, which was, you know, a plot line for a test episode of not to talk about, you know, having our finger on the pulse of weird, but listen, folks.
Maybe it's the same as the drawing of the leprechaun from one of our favorite viral videos.
Ha! Who else seen a leprechaun? Say yeah.
Law enforcement says the leprechaun looks like this.
Who knows? Who knows? We had to bring that news to you. Now we'll go back to the regular weird things topic. Guys, last week we were talking about the rumors that maybe there was going to be a planet found around Proxima Centauri, and there was no confirmation of that. A lot can change in 6 days, 7 days.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I feel like we were throwing a little shade on them, too. We were like, oh, yeah, they said that there was news incoming. Snoresville. Sorry. Wake me when you give me some news about some habitable Earth-like planet.
Now it turns out that we have confirmation, at least scientists are very reasonably confident, published a paper claiming that there is a planet orbiting Proxima Centauri, our nearest star, they believe has a planet. Right now it's called Proxima Centauri B, an exoplanet orbiting within the habitable zone of the red dwarf, the closest star to our sun.
And it's
located about 4.2 light years away.
How big is it?
It is roughly, I think, like 1.5 times, but they think about 1.3 times the mass of Earth.
So theoretically, so what would life evolve? Would it be possible to have intelligent, like human-level intelligent life evolve on even an Earth-like planet with that much more gravity? Because a big part of the way we evolved is, you know, we have tendrils and digits and we climb and a big part of that is a function of the fact that we don't weigh quite so much and that we're able to swing from tree limbs and so on. I'm not saying that, you know, anything's impossible or whatever, but I'd be really curious to know what smarter people than us think the level of gravity on a planet.
Well, a dumb guy like you will tell you, Brian, that 1.3% is not that significant. It also depends upon the side and the radius of the planet, because you can have the mass of the total planet, but also you have planets that are much, much more massive than Earth, but because they're much bigger, because remember, size and mass and weight are different things, that you might have, you could have something that have a greater mass than Earth, but it's less dense, you could have less gravity. But answer your question, that's not a theoretical holdback as far as what we think life would be. The big problem is the fact that it's so damn close to its sun, that it gets a ton of radiation, far more radiation than we get when it gets these sun, solar flares. But a research paper came out explaining how certain kinds of coral on Earth are very, very immune to forms of radiation, can actually transfer that into forms of, give off, like fluoresce, and actually provide a source of energy for other forms of life. And that's one of the things that we might look at, is the idea that there could be on Proxima Centauri B, there could be very, very more exotic forms of like coral or things like that, and rock formations. You could have things that could live inside of there. You might have parts of it that could have, if it was a planet that started further out and then it orbited in closer, you could have had life that slowly adapted and evolved. You could have had much more water, and that water could have become part of more of a, gone underground and be part of sort of a dense sort of aquifer. So,
Sure. And I'm not even thinking in terms of whether or not life is there, but specifically intelligent life, or intelligent life that's able to build and make and use tools, because just as much of our ability to create technology and create devices that are able to create other devices with greater precision is a part of, opposable thumbs and fingers and being above water and having a clear view of the night sky and, all these things that we have going for us. I wonder how many of those get taken away with something as simple as a change in density or gravity.
Yeah, and that's a good question. All depends kind of like what kind of life that you have there. That's a big thing, is that, humans have a range of masses, and, I probably weigh, 20% more than either one of you, so... to that deal, and certainly, my experience of what I've got to move around is different. Now, obviously, it's the law of scales, things that works differently, but we don't know. There's intelligent life didn't develop on our planet until, less than a million years ago, and our planet's been around for billions of years. Life has been around for billions of years, so it took a considerable amount of time and a lot of just-so things to happen to make that possible, to evolve more sophisticated brains, as far as we know. So... maybe those conditions. I'm one of those people who thinks that maybe intelligent life is a fluke that only happens once. And I would be surprised there was intelligent life there at all.
Wait, in the entire universe or galaxy, yeah. or in full stop?
Sure. Yeah.
Huh. Well. Okay. Well. Sure. Yeah. Implies that the scale is insignificant. Like whether it's like you seem like when you say sure yeah, it's like. In this room, yeah, sure. Pretty sure it only happened once. Well, in the planet, probably once. In the galaxy, probably once. In the universe, I mean, those are vastly different scales.
Yeah. But remember, our universe is still very young. Our universe is very, very young, and our solar system is one of these older sorts of ones. Proxima Centauri B is going to be around. It's going to be orbiting its star for a trillion years. We're going to get absorbed into our sun in a billion years. If you're to ask me, in the next 100 billion years of the universe, could intelligent life come up again? I'd be more inclined. Like maybe, I don't know. But I think that it certainly gets into. You're right. You're absolutely right. Like, listen, galaxy is one thing. Universe is a much, much bigger place. But it is not infinite. There is a finite size to it. And how many conditions had to be right, and how long it took for it to develop here, and how early on we are. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, I guess also then you get into the deeper question of what constitutes intelligence. Are you saying that that human intelligence is the only intelligent life that would develop on planet Earth?
I think that, if we get into tool building and transmission information over generations, those are pretty big qualities for me. And again, that's how I... people could parse that, but
right. But then you got let's say whales. They write songs that do get passed on from generation to generation, but they just don't have hands. They just got these flippy things. So it's like that's
sort of, what are those songs about? Yo, Krill's great.
Yeah, like, exactly.
What are they doing? What are they talking about? Like, hey, water. What's up? This is the best. You ever jump out sometimes? I have. So did my grandpappy.
Yeah, they pass songs. We don't know the capacity of what the bandwidth is for information getting passed through from whale to whale. We don't know, like, in tool building is sort of critical because it's a way to modify your environment to help you and pass on that stuff. There are a lot of different ways to define it, and I'm not going to say that mine is the right way to do it. And I've had people like, I think it means a sense of play. I'm like, well, dogs play, Love dog. And it's, so it can be, it's always going to be a very, very personal thing. But at what point, you know, what is it we're looking for? You know, we can communicate partially with dolphins to some degree. We can have some sort of back and forth, but their way of thinking, their way of looking at the world is so different than ours. But they're extremely intelligent, extremely intelligent.
Sure.
You know, African greys are very, very intelligent.
Well, and there's some level of trade, and African greys have demonstrated that they are able to appear to be able to count. You know,
but
there's ongoing
they,
debates about whether Coco is speaking language or just having generously interpreted faux talk.
You know, but it's where it gets back to a big part of it is the theory of mind, is that we're trying to develop models of how African greys and dolphins and everything else function inside of our heads and when we talk. We don't know that they're doing that. You know, we don't know that they're trying to make that happen. So
somebody in the chat points out a link to, you know, the old Drake equation. And there was a fantastic lecture by Michael Crichton, who was wrong about some things, but very, very smart about others. And he points out that the Drake equation is something that is literally nothing but prejudice. It is every single variable you put in there is just your preconceived notion about what you think the odds are of how different things get defined. And when an entire equation is made of prejudice, and that's a word spoken, you know, without, you know, preconceived, not meant to be a loaded word. It's like, it's just full on. It's what's already in your head being written down. And as he puts it, an equation that can mean anything means nothing, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the Drake equation, it was this idea of what number of stars would have planets orbiting them, what number of those planets would be habitable, what number of planets would have life, and what number of planets with life develop intelligent life. And what we know now is that we think that probably every star probably has planets orbiting around it. And the fact that Proxima Centauri b has a theoretically habitable planet means that the habitable planets, you know, there are probably loads of them out there. How many of them are going to be Earth-like and have, you know, seasons and stuff like we do? It's different. But that seems to be a ton out there. But we don't know how often life forms. And when it comes to, like, how often intelligent life happens, you know, I bring back the example is that if we use kind of a very strict definition of intelligent life, you know, you're going to find out in the, you know, 6 billion year history of our planet or our solar system that we've only had intelligent life for a few hundred thousand years. We've had very intelligent hominids, very, very, but self-sentient, tool-building that passed that information on. Neanderthals didn't change their hand axes for a million years.
Well, and then keep in mind also that there's very likely or theoretically some next level of intelligence that we don't meet the criteria for yet.
I agree.
So out there are some kind of synthetic future fourth-dimensional beings who are just like, well, that's not intelligent life. It's adorable that they think they're the top of the food chain.
I totally agree, and I think that one of the things that happens when we start to create artificial intelligence is that we're going to be very quickly aware of how closer we are to monkeys and rats than we are to them. That's a scary thought.
We're really cool, like rats. We're great when we compare ourselves to rats.
Are we though?
I mean,
I think I can make a case for rats having their act together. You don't see I was going to make jokes about, like, you don't see rats committing suicide or dying of stress or being addicted to drugs, but I'm pretty sure we've made sure all those things have happened. So
yeah,
I take it back.
Hey, listen, you don't see people dragging rat food around with their mouths down a subway train set of steps. Right?
No.
On the internet.
Although maybe we need to see some more of that. Maybe that's what we need, is somebody go get some rat food and start dragging it up and down.
Oh, damn. I'll tell you what. I feel like I just figured out what my what my Dragon Con costume is going to be.
It's going to be that rat dragging a giant pizza.
Yeah, no. Ashley made a pizza rat costume that I totally ganked, and I feel like I'm going to do that again for Dragon Con.
That's amazing.
You know, speaking of a rat trying to drag a piece of pizza down into the subway to feed his family of turtles.
Yeah. You know, you guys can do that for us because our piece of pizza is your generosity at patreon.com/weirdthings. You might notice that we're doing this show on a Sunday. That has not always been fortunate enough to be the case over the past few weeks because we are bouncing around and doing various different things. But it is today. We have made sure that we have not skipped a week because you guys make it so. Thanks to patreon.com/weirdthings. Kick us whatever you got if you enjoy your weekly dose of weird. Thank you to everybody who supports us at patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, I'm going to jump right in here with this question. I'm going to throw to the floor here. You know, this week's been exciting. We had a there's been a discovery of a dark matter galaxy that was something like 99.9% dark matter, which is kind of awesome because we don't know what dark matter is. You know, it's a thing that does a thing. So,
and forgive me, I never really got clear on the dark matter thing. If I remember correctly, dark matter was, and I hope I'm right. When you look at the way a galaxy spins, you think, well, if what I'm seeing is all the mass there, it shouldn't spin that way. There must be extra mass that I can't see. But if I can't see it, then that means it must be giving off no heat at all. It must be literally dark matter. That's the only way to account for the way these galaxies are spinning. Is that what it is?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good.
Yes, sir. That's what dark matter is. That's kind of our trying to understand. We've been trying to figure out what it actually is, what that material would be. And we don't know. We do not know, you know. So that's just one of the bigger mysteries. And, you know, there was a – last year there was a lot of excitement when the Large Hadron Collider was – they were like, yes, we think we have confirmation of the Higgs boson. And, you know, it was, yay, it's proof. This thing is great. We didn't – you know, just the billions of dollars we spent on this was a great idea, really, to prove the standard model. And then there were rumors, and then it seems to come out that no, that the energy levels they had – is not true. It's a statistical fluke.
Wait. Why am I just hearing this now? This is new news that just came out that when we were all cheering for, because the whole point was they're like, yes, if the Higgs boson is real, then it will be proven by a largely uniform curve with a little tiny bump, like a zit on a line at one point. And they're like, we did it. We found the zit on the line. It proves everything. God, and then everyone used the word God particle because they thought that was a good idea to keep people from overreacting. And they're saying, whoopsie, no ways?
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's the official line. Whoopsie, no ways.
Okay, so now I assume this is the time for all of this is the time for all fundamentalists to go, where's your science god now? Your zit is turns out only to be a mole. By the way, you should get that looked at.
Just that it's other scientists who've been saying we've been spending billions of dollars in support of the standard model that we keep not quite getting able to do, and the physicists working on that are like, yeah, but give us more money. We'll build a bigger one. The bigger one will do it. Meanwhile, there's all these other sciences that are like, imagine what $1 billion could do for human evolution research. You know, imagine what $1 billion could do in a lot of other areas of science, but it ain't going there. It's getting fed into this big theoretical physics thing of let's build this big, huge machine because we talk poetically about how this is understanding where things came from. And meanwhile, there are people out there in the field trying to find out human origins, and there's exciting stuff there, vastly underfunded. Because it's not a sexy, it doesn't involve as much graft as building a big, huge facility with a lot of contractors and a lot of money flowing to the states and the countries that are part of this.
This is a great question, though. The question is, like, how do you decide this is the age-old practical or applied sciences versus fundamental sciences, right? Like, you know, if nuclear physics was not very attractive until somebody says, you know, we can make a bomb out of it, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, well let's really put effort into it now. How do you decide? Should we have like a science Olympics where everybody just wrestles each other, and that's where the money goes?
So right now we have, you know, NASA's working on the SLS, you know, the quote Senate launch system, this big huge rocket that's supposed to be our next generation of vehicle. And guess what? It's going to take longer and cost a lot more money and may not have a practical mission because it'll be too expensive to use it. But hey, a lot of the contractors that have worked for NASA for years love this program, you know, and a lot of people work for NASA are like, yeah, but we love it if we get funded. And it's this, we have this idea of science as this noble pursuit, but it's they're people who need jobs and who are trying to make, you know, get by doing what they're doing, and everybody has their vested interests. And the problem is when you're spending billions of dollars in public money, I think you need to be dealing with some criticism. You can't just say, hey, it's science. You know, it's science, bro. Don't be one of those people who's anti-science. Be like, well, yeah, there's a lot of kinds of science, and not all, you know, not every kind of science gets treated that way. And, you know, the ones that involve opportunity for graft and big contracts and big things like that tend to happen where things are like, hey, you know, let's, you know, $1 billion. Imagine if you could give, you know, $1,000 million grants to paleontologists and biologists and people doing the research of human evolution. You know, what would that be like? What would you be able to do there? What would be the picture we'd have?
I mean, well, I guess the answer is the problem
is also you don't give that bone for everybody who is okaying this funding and research to take back, right? Like if you are going to champion or you're going to get behind a bill that does X, Y, or Z, you want something to show for it, or else it's going to get punched in your face during the next time that you run for whatever seat you're in, because somebody will say like, well, while Senator Murphy was funding whether or not penguins are gay, the people in their district was dying in the streets. Like, you know, so you need to have, if you are going to put your name on, if you're going to make sure that this happens, then this needs to be something that you can say like, yes, I'm proud to stand for space or physics or something like that. Like you need something that is retail.
I mean, so is the takeaway that we like didn't learn anything and we yielded nothing for this $1 billion, or that we got a little bit, or, you know, and also in the grand scheme of it, then it gets triple complicated, because it's like, are we talking about just government funding money, or are we talking about like private investment? Because of course we have people, you know, getting ready to space mine all the asteroids, and I assume nobody's complaining about whether or not their efforts are fruitless or not.
Well, it's government money, and it's multiple governments' money, so it's the people's money, and it comes down to, you know, and it's like, I love the idea of super colliders, because like, I think that's a great idea, but I can also tell you, you know, the amount of money trying to be spent to try to make them cheaper, faster, smaller, not much, you know, because that's not the interest, and there are people who if you put 10% of that budget into building better, smaller systems or radical ways on which to do this sort of research, you might have some amazing results, but that's not in people's interest. We talk about the Human Genome Project. Craig Venter, part of this project, trying to map the human genome, which means you map the human genome, maybe we could figure out some cures and stuff for diseases. Guy's working for it, goes to the bosses there. This is government project, says, hey, I have a faster way to do this. I have a faster way. We can map this genome quicker. Like, nope, you know, we're fully funded. We're funded for the next 10 years. We don't need to speed this up. Everybody's got jobs, whatever. That would not what we're trying to do here. He's like, all right, I'm going to go start my own company. I'm going to go do it myself. And they're like, whoa. All right, then we're going to say it's a tie.
Well, so, you know? Okay, well, so what's the, I guess I was going to say what's the answer, but that makes me wonder what's the question. Is the question is, which is the best science and how much money does it deserve?
The question is, should we be spending all this money in one area? If we have X amount of dollars to spend on science, okay, things that are, the bigger the project and the more opportunities for other people to get work, whether they're contractors or whatever, the better your chance of succeeding. It has nothing to do with really the likelihood of it, you know, like trying to discover the Higgs boson is fascinating. But the standard model may be totally wrong. It probably is. And, you know, probably has, you know, these, there's probably reasons why we haven't been able to confirm this without having to keep refining it. So the point is that big projects get funded because there's a lot of handouts.
Do you know what? I would love for somebody to design a website, design an engine where you break down questions in binary format about where $1, if you had $1 to spend, would you spend it on a project that would definitely, let's say, reduce carbon emissions by 50% worldwide over the next 100 years, or would you spend it on confirming whether or not the Higgs boson is a real particle
or
not?
Well, I'm going to throw a question
Typical small-minded Brian. You don't dream anymore, Brian. You don't dream about the big solutions, the big, amazing things we could discover if only we spent all this money on one big thing instead of a million little confirmations.
Here's my issue with that is that, remember the excitement on solar roads and how us and many others had to explain to people why it was a really dumb idea, you know?
Sure.
Because
it was a really great viral video, though, in the same way that Bit My Finger was.
Because people were like, yeah, Solar Roads, why not? And you're like, well, I'm sure you've put a lot of thought into this thing. You know, there's actually a lot of really good reasons why. And that gets to be the frustrating thing. Like, you know, it's we get upset at these companies, right now you have the whole thing with EpiPen. You know, this company decided to raise the price, which looks like to be just an outrageous thing to do. And people are outraged by it. And it's like, hey, how much money did you spend funding startups to come up with competitive products? You know, what have you done to try to solve this problem? And, you know,
and also the EpiPen thing is like, this is also kind of the process of that like, you know, I don't know. I mean, and obviously the EpiPen thing is certainly a personal situation for the Brushwood house because the, you know, your daughters suffer from food allergies. But it kind of, I am only half educated on this, so I don't want to shoot off half cocked, but it seems to me that withering public and market pressure on what the general populace deems to be too high of a price is part of the risk of raising prices that high.
I agree. And I think that, and that's it's, and it's good. I'd like to see more of that too, because you've had people with, you know, they have children who have these, you know, these orphan conditions. There aren't, you know, orphan diseases. There aren't as much treatments and those prices go way up, whatever. And it's a bigger problem, but it's also like, all right, what are the solutions besides just yelling at these, guess what? Months ago was Martin Skrull, where it's always going to be some evil person who's going to do this. Let's yell at them for doing what I think is just not cool. What can we do proactively in the future to encourage the development of new drugs? Because one of the problems we've had before is like when other countries decided they were going to do counterfeit, let's say AZT, is that it had a huge impact on investing in new AIDS drugs. And I understand why they did it. I understand the very humanitarian reason you have people dying that you're going to go do that. But also in your country that does have billions of dollars of resources that maybe you could spend on it. But when you do this and you're championing like, yeah, you're doing the right thing. It's like, yeah, we may not get the next drug because you destroyed the market for it. How do we solve that? How do we continue this?
Well, yeah, Brian, I mean, you're the only one with real skin in the game when it comes to the EpiPen thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm too ill-informed to really go anywhere with it. I do know that I've seen some tweets, people talking about like, hey, here's a off-brand, very similar substance that isn't marketed as a life-saving way to distribute epinephrine, but does essentially the same thing. And I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys.
Yeah, it's a scary thing. It's a scary thing because you look at like raising the price like they did could be in the difference between the family deciding to have one or two, you know, one to send with a kid to school. And that's a man, you know, we're all kind of pro free. We're all free market type people. But you look at this situation here, it's like, how do we going forward have children die?
Well, keep in mind also there's to me, what's more interesting is the larger question of how much of this is a fact of somebody having gotten there first and being the only one who knows the process versus artificial constraints for protected monopolies? Like that's a different solution when all of a sudden you're paying the right politicians to pass the right law to guarantee you a certain amount of time that nobody legally is able to compete with your product. That doesn't strike me as so great.
Well, yeah. And also the some of the solutions that have kind of been bandied about, where like, oh, well, you should be price locked or you know, the government would take over manufacturing of life-saving stuff doesn't necessarily solve that problem at all, right? Because if the government now has a stake in either subsidy or manufacturing of certain things, then it is less likely that people will want to create cheaper, different alternatives for it.
Yeah, it's complicated. Point is, big science. Do we need it or do we need a lot of medium science?
Man, I don't even know. It just seems to me like in general, the solution should always be more people competing, more people competing on everything always. And yes, I understand the need to quote unquote protect, to incentivize people to compete, but we already have that and we don't even need it as far as like, you know, government grants or government protected monopolies. I'm a bigger fan of Ansari X Prize type incentives, where for every $10 million X Prize you offer, you're going to get $130 million of private investment, most of whom are going to fail and lose, but they're going to, you know, be part of the general push that's going to accelerate everything forward.
Speaking of protected, Brian, you're protected right now.
I don't know that I am.
You're protected by several people guarding you as you're in a basement, tied up in a town called Salvation.
Okay.
On Journey Quest.
All right, look. Am I alone, or is our chick friend around?
She's been pulled away from you, Brian. Damn. You're in the basement of Dunkin' Donuts somewhere in some small town somewhere in Texas. You were pedaling along on your bicycle, and you were able to avoid, by the way, the landmines there for cars. So, listen, I'm going to shut up about giving you a hard time about that, okay?
Good, good.
You're like, limpet mine, rolled around it, F you, Maine, wherever you are.
I went off the beaten path, good.
I'm like, how did this get into my scenario? I thought I was in control. So, you're there, then all of a sudden you hear a gunshot. You look around and you're surrounded by guys with a rifle, people, masked figures.
How many am I looking at?
What's that?
How many of them?
You see at least four barrels pointed at you.
Okay, and they're all male?
They're covered up. Okay.
They look weathered. Arms in the air, obviously. You know, like, hey.
Yeah.
I heard this was the place to be.
Get off your vehicle and lay down on the ground.
I do.
Like to imagine, though, that Brian has been pedaling so hard that his hands are up, but it's also like behind his head because he's like catching his breath, like, all right, no, I'm giving up. I'm just trying to get some wind.
And big sweat stains.
Three deep.
Big. They're like, hey, put your arms down.
They're like, you guys got some, you got a bit of water? It's been, it's hot out here. It's West Texas.
Real scorcher.
Brian, so you get off your bike, you lay down flat on the ground.
Yep.
Hood goes over your head, hands get tied up.
Okay. Well, and by the way, the whole time I'm just saying, you know, this isn't necessary. There's so few of us alive. Seems like we should pool our resources. We should all be on the same team here.
Yeah. They're like, just keep your mouth shut. You get dragged, carried away, thrown in the back of a truck. 15 minutes later, you're pushed down some stairs. You're put inside of, like, you know, basement, you know. Another masked figure's got their little mask on, you know, and they're sitting on the staircase. Yeah, you know what?
Can I just ask real quick, what is it with the masks? Because, like, I understand if you're hiding from me, but it's not – I don't work for the media. I'm not a journalist. If you want a journalist, you really ought to talk to my partner in crime, Justin Robert Young. He's I mean, you can show me what you look like, right?
Where is this Justin? So somebody comes in there, figure comes in there, not holding a gun, another mask over his face, tall, posing. You're like, all right.
You know what? At this point, I'm not even going to say, you don't have to show me your face. Let's just have mask parody. Seems like I should have a mask too. And at this point, I take my hands and I curl them over with two okay signs. That I invert over my face, and I'm like, I have a mask too.
All right, well that's what you'd like to do, Brian, but your hands are tied behind your back, so
okay.
You can't.
Damn. All right.
No, see, Brian used the Rogues Gallery. One of the things he bought there to untie.
Well, okay. I'm thinking about whether or not I'm going to pull off. I don't know what my binds are, but maybe that I can use my Rogues Ring to saw my way out. But I'm just taking it all in. So I'm in a Dunkin' Donuts. Somebody comes down with the mask. What do they say to me?
What's your name?
I say Spartacus. No, wait, it's Luke Skywalker. Also, what does it matter? The world's ended.
You get kicked in the stomach really hard, Brian. Really, really hard. Really painfully hard.
Don't try to be a hero, boy.
Voice says, next time it's your balls.
All right, fine. I'm the internet's Brian Brushwood. Remember when we used to have an internet? That was me on it.
Then you hear, oh, man. Wait, scam school, Brian?
I'm like, yeah, all right, yeah, it is.
Guy takes off a mask. Some Diamond Club member, you've met him before, you don't really vague name. We'll call him Diamond Club Steve.
Oh, I was like, hey, Diamond Club Steve, did we meet at was it CreateCon? Were you on CreateCon?
Dude, you did this college lecture. It was great. Don't you remember we hung out afterwards?
Oh, yeah,
it was a great time.
Man, I just have this weird thing where it's hard for me to remember college lectures when I'm tied up.
Oh yeah, bro. Here, we'll take care. I thought you used the Rogue's Ring. I saw it on you.
Well,
man.
These seem like really nice ropes that you put me in, so I didn't want to actually tear them apart or nothing. You know?
Oh, no worries. Belinda, would you untie him here, please?
Oh, Belinda, is this the Belinda you were talking about
takes
at that lecture?
Mask, beautiful redheaded woman.
Oh, man, wow. You guys have a hell of a setup. I noticed that we're kind of underground in a basement. Did this used to be a Dunkin' Donuts? Because I think I played a gig here once.
Still is. We got the fryer working and everything.
Oh my god! Can I get a donut?
Yeah, we're gonna talk first.
Well, let's chat. What's going on here? What do you got here?
All right, Brian. Would you pull over? I'm gonna give you pull over a carton of cream filling cubes. Have a seat. I'm gonna talk to you, Belinda. Would you go upstairs and go check on things?
We're gonna talk.
I'll be right back.
We're gonna talk some custard talk here. All right,
man. So, listen, I'm going to give you the lay of the land here. You know, when this outbreaky thing started coming through town, coming through everywhere, there was an army truck here, had a bunch of vaccine in it.
Yeah.
And I overheard a couple guys talking over at Waffle Hut and about the vaccine and stuff. People were getting sick. And so me and a couple friends, we one thing led to another. Well, let's just say we got the vaccine.
Wait, I mean, did you take it? Did you guys just did you steal vaccine based on hearsay and then administer it to yourself in the hopes that it happened to match the disease that was going on?
Brian, people were dying.
I'm not judging.
There's a little judging. There's a little judginess in your voice.
I'm clarify. That's my clarifying voice. A lot of people confuse it for my judging voice.
Sounded judgy for me. Okay, never right, mind. See, I'm going to get the donuts.
By the way, Belinda, you're doing great with the donuts. They smell delicious.
Thanks.
I had some of the vaccine. I was able to save some people, save some lives. Happened to be at that point in time, you know.
So are you immune?
What's that?
Are you immune? You had the vaccine?
Well, you know, there might be other versions of it going out there, but we're not going to get into the here or the what or what else I may know or whatever. I'm just going to give you the sort of the present. I'm going to catch you up right now.
Sure.
There may have been a bus with a bunch of college cheerleaders driving through town at the time.
Yeah.
I may have been their savior.
What, you administered a lot of vaccines.
Let's say a lot of people in Salvation died so I could save these young lives.
Wait. You selected is this a little bit of now Steve, come on. Diamond Club, right? You and me,
Diamond
we're
Club
bros.
Steve. It's actually my name here is Diamond Club Steve.
Diamond Club Steve. It's just us boys here.
I hope you don't
mind.
I actually call this the Diamond Club.
Oh, that's great. That's great. It's just us here. I don't think Belinda can hear us up there. You can't hear us up there, can you, Belinda?
Nope.
Okay, good. Listen, did you actively select to save the lives of beautiful women so that you could, you know, let your genetic lineage become superior in the brave new world?
Sure. That second part's totally the reason why I did it.
Yes. Okay. But I mean, ultimately that's the result though.
Yes.
But
yes.
these are healthy, nubile women.
Yes. Very much so. And Brian, I'm going to tell you got a little bit of a problem here.
I give advice. That's what I do in the post-apocalypse.
Population of Salvation's approximately 31.
Okay. How many of them are cheerleaders?
Are just of the female persuasion?
Sure.
29.
Ooh. Just so we're clear, are you counting me in that? Am I in the 31? The
winner, winner, chicken dinner, Bri.
Yeah. Were you liking the equilibrium here? Because if you want to just, you know, Did I ever tell you how much I love protecting monopolies? It seems like you should have a monopoly on sex and power in this region. And also, I love the government, and you are the government. Let me get out of your way.
Donuts are done. We don't have any of the rings, but we got plenty of holes.
Yeah. Brian, I don't think you're getting at the problem here. Imagine you had a donut shop, and you could have as many donuts as you want.
Yeah.
And imagine the first few days you just eat donuts all the time. Donuts, 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 donuts.
Oh, you're looking for pigs in a blanket, aren't you?
No, Brian. And put your pants back on.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was real awkward. Yeah. I mean, I was just doing my best to be there for you, but I guess no. I'm sorry.
Brian, I appreciate the offer.
No, I mean, like, I'm here to help. I'm here to help. You were kind enough to.
No, I never picked that up.
Hey, you know, we still do the podcast. Diamond Club's a real thing. Justin and I, we still making them laugh.
I was more of a Jason Murphy fan, to be honest.
Ah, damn it. Damn it. maybe I'm not clear on the problem.
Justin's a great guy. You know, sad that he died, all that. Wait, did you say he's still alive?
In my head.
I'm not going to have him killed.
I know you wouldn't. I know you wouldn't. But it's too bad he would succumb to the disease. I think he was in Ohio when the plague hit.
All right, Brian, because you wouldn't lie to me, because I'm going to show you the Diamond Club symbol, and you wouldn't lie to somebody to do that.
Oh, no. I mean, hey, I'm going to do the Diamond Club symbol back to you. It's a new variation where I put across my fingers behind my back.
Brian.
No?
We saw the truck. We saw Justin. We saw you get out.
Okay. All right, fine. We have been recording new episodes of Night Attack, but here's the good news. If you just, there's not a website anymore. Just write down the words patreon.com/nightattack and I'll give you those episodes. You could give me whatever amount of donuts you want for them. Just pledge and we'll give them to you on an ongoing basis.
All right, Brian, listen, let's talk real here. See, here's the problem. Salvation may be the last hope for humanity. Maybe the last hope for humanity.
Why? It seems like
because it's all that's left, Brian.
I mean, we don't know. Don't you need a Magellan to be searching on your behalf? We'll plant flags that say salvation as far west as you want.
Brian, we need to search. We need to look. We need to find other people out there. We need to know what the world is like.
I agree. I brought one. I brought a woman. She seemed relatively sane.
Is that something about you killing her child, by the way?
I mean, the child's dead.
All right, let's not talk about that. Brian, so here's my thing. Here's my offer to you.
Okay.
It's vitally important we go explore. It's vitally important that we continue. It's vitally important that we continue here. It's vitally important that salvation is looked after, protected.
Yeah, about that. It seems like you got that under control, right?
Brian, I need to get out of here. Brian, wait. I've had enough.
Diamond Club, Steve, you're surrounded. Wait, yeah, you're surrounded by all these beautiful nubile women. You're the literal last man on earth, as far as they know.
Listen, yeah, and it's great. It's wonderful. Why should I be the only one that has this benefit? And if we want to repopulate the earth, can't just be my genes. We don't want a bunch of mongoloid babies, do we?
Well, first of all, I bristle
typical
at the insensitive.
Typical Diamond Club, Steve. Always blah blah blah.
So you just want to get out of Dodge? You want to join us?
I want you to take my place here.
Okay, but you'll be gone, and then you won't really have any way. There won't be any more guns on me, and I could go.
No, well, you can't. Like, we've got some freezers and stuff with vaccine and stuff, and I would need you to stay here to take care of it.
Yeah, listen, about that. We're on a quest, kind of our quest. I'm looking at my quest booklet. It's kind of, you know who would be great? That crazy person. She's really obsessed with babies. She wants to upset. Do we ever find out her name? How about I call? Can I call Justin? Can I get him on the phone?
Ryan, are you an idiot?
Well, I mean, on the radio.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, is there any way? Can we go capture my friend Justin, and then we could all have this conversation?
Brian, no. I listen. I kind of told the ladies that we were going to have a new leader. A new person's coming. I was going to go off and find more help. And when we walk up those stairs, you've got to be the one that says it.
Okay. Yours. All right. All right. Fine. Fine. I'll be their leader. real quick, any crazy rules, customs, any kind of, you know, fatwas you've issued?
Well, we are going to give you a tracking collar so you don't just tell me you're going to be the leader and run off.
All right. Come on. Who flashed the Diamond Club sign? Me. That's
yeah, Brian. Don't, no, I don't worry think about you that. Realize, like, I'm Diamond Club now. I'm Diamond Club Steve.
Okay, great leader. Let's put a pin in the whole collar thing. Maybe I meet the ladies or citizens.
Brian, it's not an issue we get to negotiate.
All right, give me the collar. It's fine. Is this okay. Like it's locked on? Is that what's going on?
Yes. Yeah, we're gonna lock this thing on you. It's good.
Okay, great. We got a collar on.
And thank God, because like I've never raised children, and I don't even know where to begin. 28 pregnancies. Can you imagine that?
Oh.
28. What are the chances? We think that vaccine had some sort of fertility thing to it, too.
Oh. So they're you didn't mention they're all a little bit pregnant. Okay. Great. Okay. Let's meet them. Let's. Are we having a mixer? Is that what's going on?
We're gonna find out next week, Brian. When you meet them. Find out what's up with Justin.
Probably shouldn't have put on that collar.
No, probably not.
I mean, I didn't really have many other choices. I mean, they have guns, and also you could do worse than. I mean, what's? I it's not like I can get them pregnant.
Yeah. Well,
talk to Brian.
Could be. Yes. Next time on Journey Quest, the misogynistic apocalyptic male fetish fantasy, we'll find out their consequences to these things.
Oi,
Brian.
What?
At least when I abandoned you last week, I was continuing on our mission.
Dude, I was trying to get to the mission. What am I going
to get to the missionary position?
I mean, okay, well, I want to see a society. I want to see what
we had a mission. We had a journey and a quest, which is why
I got captured. I still have to rescue that girl.
Meanwhile, on Journey Quest, we're continuing on right now. Bring in Justin Robert Young to talk to Brian. Hey, Brian, I brought your friend Justin. I was hoping it was Jason or Tom Merritt. But here, right. Why don't you guys talk this over?
All right, look.
Wait. All right, so real, do we get any feedback on how I got there? Did they capture the wagon? Because we don't know the backstory. I'm just there.
You're just there. Who cares? You know.
Also, wasn't there that other guy that sounded like Brian?
You're on the walkie-talkies.
All right.
Okay.
All right, listen, Justin, I'm totally captured. They got me in chains. They kind of want me to be leader. Sounds really like a, you know, lateral management role. They're pivoting, apparently, to
Are you alone?
No, but we can use our secret code that we worked out.
Well, who else? Is Diamond Club Steve there?
Yeah. Diamond Club Steve is.
Hey, bro, I'm going to go upstairs to check on the Krillers.
Okay, great. All right.
Listen, man, they got this chain thing around my neck, and there's nothing but pregnant cheerleaders here. To be honest, this guy sounds like a deadbeat, and he just wants out of his responsibility. If there's a way that I can kind of sneak
Hey, Brian, you want to try some? Oh, Brian, that hurt. That's going to be a Boston cream.
No. We're working on a new rap album. Stephen Cogswell is also alive. He's going to remix this.
Everything I heard, I do agree with.
Yeah. Let's escape. Let's escape. Let's escape. Oh, what a cape. Capers.
All right. I got an idea.
Yeah.
What if this guy, Diamond Club Steve, needs a way to get out, right? So find out whether or not he has a vehicle that is comparable to our battle wagon.
Wait, why don't we just invite Diamond Club Steve? Tell him that we're all...
Are we going to skip past the part? How many shady characters do you need to bring on to our adventure? Mary, who's probably going to axe us because she thinks that we murdered her child. It's going to be Despot Epsilon. Who's impregnated all these people and puts a tracking collar on you?
But I mean, that's fine. But then we leave him, and then on the road we go. No,
here's what we do: you find out whether or not he's got a vehicle that is comparable.
Why do we need to see if he has a vehicle?
hold on. Wait for the plan.
All right.
So then you offer in exchange for taking off the tracking collar that we will give him our battle wagon, right? And then at the point of the handoff, he's got is 28 people that you're supposed to be taking care of. We axe Diamond Club Steve. We get into the battle wagon. Get the hell out of Dodge.
For our audio listeners, Bryce has superimposed a tracking collar on Brian's neck. I'm like, is that new studio equipment?
I mean, okay, all right. Number one, first of all, it's not that uncomfortable. Second of all, this tracking collar is the closest thing that exists to Twitter in this post-apocalyptic universe. I feel like it pretty much just says, I'm here doing my thing, and everyone should know. Third of all, somebody should stay to take care of all these pregnant ladies. I mean, what, are you going to envision some kind of magical future where women have agency and take care of themselves?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, all right, I'm down. I'm in. Let's go.
All right, so you got to negotiate with him and make the deal with Diamond Club Steve.
Diamond Club
will take off the collar, because the collar's got to come off in exchange for us giving him the battle wagon to go out on.
Okay, now, but how do we get the battle wagon back again? And why?
Just at the exchange, man. We blow him off at the exchange.
Okay, all right. DCS, Diamond Club Steve, where are you, bud?
Yo, here, Brian. Don't call. Right here.
Hey, man, listen. Totally down with your plan. I understand you got to take care of all these ladies. You understand that you want to get out there. Hey, you remember Andrew Main? We were on a quest to go find him. So in fact, we have this sweet battle wagon. Justin's there. I was just talking to him on the radio. How about we do this? Just get this silly tracking collar off of me. You and Justin can hop in that battle wagon. Off you go. I'll take care of everything.
Listen, Brian, I'm going to got to table this discussion right now. We've got a Veronica Mars fan fiction contest I got to go judge. So think that over. I'll be back.
All right.
Hey, come on. Sales pressure. The clock is ticking. You'd love to keep this on, but your manager's in your ear. You got to make a call before the sales quarter.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, Diamond Club Steve, I'm sorry, but my manager says this is a one-time offer deal. You either take it or you never get it again.
No. What'd you just eat? Allergy. You have an EpiPen on the battle wagon.
Well, yeah, also, I ate that donut and I need to get to the battle wagon. This is a lot of tactics that this walkie-talkie is suggesting that I do at once, but I'm just going to try all the sales tactics.
Also, we'll have to find out next week.
God damn it.
I think we rallied. We were in a really dark place and we rallied.
Fair enough.
Gentlemen, do you have any picks?
Yeah, I do. I got a pick that I hated as a book, never finished it. Tried to read it as an audiobook, never finished it. It was tedious and slow, and I didn't care for it much. But now it's a BBC television show that just popped up on Netflix. Got to admit, kind of love it. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell just popped up on Netflix. It's a BBC original. And I think the reason I didn't care for the book or audiobook is, I mean, it's about Victorian England alternate reality where magic used to be a thing and then it stopped being a thing. And I think I don't mind a Victorian world. I just mind reading Victorian style tedium. And the television show does not have that Victorian style tedium. It's just about a Victorian style world, which I loved. Digging it. I'm only one episode in.
Justin?
My pick is going to be Mr. Robot. It's on the USA Network, where you can also find Monday Night Raw and Crisley Knows Best. But you can very much enjoy what I think is the best show on television. I remember after I watched the first season, I was talking to Andrew, and we were kind of having a larger discussion about big visionary rad TV shows and how, especially when they are so creator driven, which Mr. Robot is, and this season is written and directed by the showrunner,
Sam Esmail.
Exactly. That these shows have a tendency to disappear up their own butt at a certain point because you're very much inside one person's head and they can, right? And so I was kind of in my in the back of my mind, kind of thinking, you know, I mean, listen, that first season was just brilliant. I kind of wonder whether or not it's possible that you can have a show sort of exist at that level. And now, 8 episodes into a 12-episode season 2, I'm very, very, very much loving it. And you know, there are twists and turns, and some of them have been controversial with the audience. I have loved all of them, and I don't think that they are done unfolding. And I think that that's the kind of very confident television that we've come to know and love from Mr. Robot. And I think it's just so exceptional. It's really, really good.
I haven't seen the latest episode of Mr. Robot, but I am much cooler on season 2 than I was on season 1. Yeah. Just because season 2 is a lot more work than season 1. There's a lot more, and maybe it's because I'm watching it week over week that it's different than the binging experience, but it's just like, oh no, but don't you remember this guy? He showed up for 5 seconds last season. And now you're being reminded of him in the previously on because it's an important piece of the puzzle in this one episode you're watching right now.
That's kind of been something that they've done a lot, though, is especially there was a point at the end of season 1 when two characters that were both central to the plot, but you hadn't really seen interact with each other, were all of a sudden in a scene together and really friendly. And that foreshadowed a big revelation that was either coming later in that episode or the next episode, that because you are dealing with an unreliable narrator, you tend to have the world around you is kind of revealed as he either reveals it to himself or it is revealed to him in his mental state.
Yeah, I guess also I'm still processing the difference. I think it's a smart move for them to make, but in the first season, he's an unreliable narrator because he sees things a certain way, whereas in the second season, he's an unreliable narrator because he's like, oh, kind of been lying to you, whoopsie doodle, which is a different thing. It just changes a bit of the tone.
Yeah, I mean, we can parse it, you know, in terms of how different that is from revelations in the first season. But I definitely see where you're coming from, and I think that it's not, you know, invalid criticism, but it to me signals that you are opening up so many more narrative opportunities, and what had been an entertaining, fun, plot line for him. Now becomes a bigger, more interesting and rich one. I also think that what we are probably going to see, or what I hope we are going to see in this show that we were not necessarily expecting, is you are starting to see some of the real world ramifications of what the end of the first season brought.
Right.
And I would love for the show to spin a little bit more toward that this show, the most like our world would be, you know, the first season. And as we get into subsequent seasons, it starts to look and feel and act like a different kind of place.
That would be great, especially given that the entire purpose of the big quest of the first season was, you know, to liberate people, but instead would have just made things an awful lot like Journey Quest.
Well, I mean, you know, and it becomes the question, you know, how, and this is a great question to ask of like revolutions in general. Why do revolutions tend to kill revolutionaries, right? Like, why do revolutions, if they are successful, tend to create power vacuums? There's a lot of great, great, great questions. And as we are in a hyper political space right now with the election going on, but also just broadly as we're more interconnected throughout the world and we are, I think, a more empathetic people thanks to the internet. You know, the question is, what are our desires? What is revenge? And what is solution? And what is progress? And for a show that has character motivations that tend to be very feel-goody, I think it speaks to the intelligence of the show that very often what is happening based on their actions has unintended consequences. And I think that's a really rad part of the show.
What about you, Andrew?
I had that whole thing muted. You guys were way more spoiler than you realized. And I love that show, and it won't have anything ruined for me. So I have no idea what you said, but I'm going to double down on Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Right on.
I, too, picked up that book. I think I have the book, started the book, too dry, too Victorian, exactly everything you said.
Everything's footnotes. Half the book is footnotes.
Yeah, and it was one of these things where it was so dense to try to get. I tried that first chapter. I'm like, this is just so open. And I mean, there are people who love that kind of thing. For me, not. And so I didn't get the audiobook until after I watched that TV series. And I actually bought the series when it was on iTunes. And then now that it's on, now that it's out here, this was my pick because it's just, the way they did this alternative history without it being too weird and too bizarre, where it sort of fits in natural, the idea that magic was a thing, kind of implying sort of back in sort of a medieval sort of era thing. Loved it. Loved the way that was. So I really, really, really highly recommend it.
Awesome.
All right, gentlemen, it's been weird.
So it has.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.